Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Leiter, and I get to say now, for the fourth season in a row, welcome to the party. Well, 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 here we are again. Season four is here, and we are excited. In fact, more than excited, elated. So good to be back with you guys once again. And just want to pause before I continue and thank you all so much for the past three seasons, for all of your listening, for everyone who has listened, liked, shared, subscribed. I sound like a YouTuber, but what it's worth, just want to say thank you guys so much for listening, for recommending, for those of you who have reached out to us, sent us text messages or affirming messages and encouragement. We really appreciate you guys, and it is just an honor to have these conversations and to have you guys listen. So for our first episode, this one's a little bit of an interesting one. This actually marks kind of a momentous moment. This is the very first episode that I was not a part of. And I'm not sure how that happened. I'm usually, you know what, I'm just going to boast for a second. I'm the stalwart one of the group. Let's just get this, sorted first. I'm the stalwart one of the group. They're all going to tell you that's not true, but it is. Look at me. Look how consistent I am. I've been in every single episode of Seeking What They Sought three seasons in a row, and this is my first absent moment. What a moment that is. Anyway, this episode has the guys sort of talking about what's been going on with us for the past year while we've been in hiatus. And another fun fact is I have actually not heard this episode yet. They they recorded it and then they asked me specifically not to listen to it. So I have no idea what they're about to say in this episode. I'm assuming it's all ridicule as a friend group. If you guys have been following us, you probably have learned this by now, but we all believe that the sixth love language, is ridicule. So I'm fully expecting a lot of that. Let's see what happens. We're gonna dive right in.
Hey everyone, welcome to Seeking What They Sought. It's our new season. Is this season four, guys? I don't even
season
know.
Four.
How long we've been going? Season four of Seeking What They Sought. And I'm here with Eric and Sean. And Anthony was supposed to join us we decided we were going to do this at 8 a.m. We're going to record it at 8 a.m.
Yep.
It's 9:24 right now. Anthony's just not. Anthony doesn't exist. We don't even know where he is. He's gone. He might be dead, but he's probably just asleep.
The mistake we made was we forgot that he wasn't at Andrew's, where he was hours ahead of us.
3 hours. Yeah, so he's usually 3 hours ahead. So if we do an early time, then...
And even then, he's still last.
Yep, he's usually late. So what we decided is, because he's not here, we would intentionally focus on that over the course of the episode. Just because we're just doing it to spite him. So, but Eric, you have COVID, don't you?
Yeah, you know, it's. I said everybody's doing it, so gotta get on the trend, you know.
Everybody's doing it. So Eric, if everybody, all your friends jumped off a bridge, would you jump off it too?
Only if you guys did it first.
Hey, that's less dangerous than the coronavirus.
Is that your hot take on this? So, Sean, let's talk about anti-vax. Let's talk about how
All right.
Sean, we've always known. So Eric has COVID, but you also, another update in your life is you had a second child, right?
Yeah, COVID, second baby, you know, which is more exciting, I don't know. But, I had another kid, a second boy, and that's been pretty fun, actually. And I'm still on paternity leave, so that's nice.
Yeah, being a lazy boy over there.
Just living it up, getting COVID.
Yeah, lazy with two kids. That's obviously possible. But Sean, you're having another kid too, right?
I am.
You're joining the ranks of being a girl dad, right?
Yep. One boy, one girl, and then it's done. I am done after two.
So, Sean, how are you going to ensure that you're done having kids?
Toaster accident.
What does that mean?
Explain.
There's nothing to explain. You should just know what that means.
Sean, I'm asking you because I know the answer, and I just want you to talk about the upcoming surgery that you're planning on having.
Yeah, we're going to actually do a vlog here at Seeking What They Sought of my whole journey.
Sean's vasectomy. So, okay, perfect. Well,
so three parts
to that.
It's going to be Seeking What They Snip.
Eric, you're going to have so much fun filming it.
Snipping
that,
what
I'm
she
sure.
shot.
So.
This is okay. going great, guys. So,
this is,
I don't
yeah,
know if
this
we
is,
should do another season. This is
our friendship right here. So yeah, well, I'm glad, Sean. We have I'm going to be at your baby shower, and we're going to be on dad duty while all of the women.
Yep.
I don't even know what you do during a baby shower, to be honest.
It just showers babies from the sky. You gotta catch them.
Gotta catch them all.
Eric, you gotta in post, you gotta put the Pokemon song there, the 90s anime.
I'll have to Google that.
But yeah, I'm really excited. It's still, I'm definitely less nervous second go around than the first kid. Less energy going towards prep, even though my wife is, let's be honest, she's the one that does all the prep. But yeah, I'm excited to have a baby girl that'll be just in a couple months. Probably whenever this goes out, might already happen.
You guys ever realize, like, there's always the stereotypes about husbands and wives, right? There's like the wives taking care of the kid and having like the brain space to be so much more aware of so many things happening with their child. And then dads have like that whole thing is like, well, I don't even know who my kid's teacher is, you know, sort of thing. Like the mom knows everything, and dad. And, you know, what's funny is now being a dad, that is so untrue. I think it's actually worse than that. The sheer number of things my wife pays attention to that I just don't catch is incredible. I mean, it's my wife is so much better prepared for all of this than I ever will or was or will be. So
I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah.
So Jesse, out of all of us, you've got an interesting story about the last 6 months, maybe 7 months now.
Well, interesting is generous, but
yeah, I mean it's kind of boring, to be honest, in the grand scheme of things. But you were a pastor in Washington State for how many years after graduating college?
Five
years,
just under five, yeah.
And you are now in Southern California. What happened? What led you to the land of sin?
You know. Yeah, actually, so on a serious note, it's been a crazy, really, year and a half, I think, for my wife and I. When COVID hit, the church that I was at, one of the churches that I was at, and when I was at the majority of the time, was at a pretty good place, and then COVID hit, and COVID did a number on it. And there's lots of reasons for that. There's lots of stuff I could take responsibility for. There's lots of stuff that's just, you know, the nature of COVID and what it did to us as a society had a role to play. There's a lot of where the church was at. The church is kind of at a space where 50% of the people there were like new, hadn't been there for a long time. And so when COVID hit, they weren't as connected as people who'd been there for 10, 20 years, you know. So a lot of the people who were there right when COVID hit and were new, they were out, you know, gone within a month. So it was just one of those things where I remember a month into COVID, I just felt like, I felt like it was a break. I didn't realize how exhausted I was. And of course, like, I mean, we joke about COVID and all that stuff, but obviously it has been a very serious thing for a lot of people. But for me, it was kind of in that space of, I don't know, this is just, I didn't realize how tired I was, how exhausted I was from the last few years. And so I started thinking, like, well, this is, if there's any time to think about changing careers or just trying it out, just like, you know, testing doors, this would be the time. And so actually I guess it would have been June of 2020, I decided to apply to a police department just to see, to be a police officer. People, whenever I say that, like, oh, to be a chaplain? No, to be actually, like, to be a police officer. That was right in the middle, like, right in the middle of Black Lives Matter happening, George Floyd being murdered and things like that. Like, it was just a whole time in our country. it feels like years ago. It was like a year and a half ago. It was not very long ago. Anyways, so yeah, that all happened. The department I had applied for was obviously in a lot of turmoil as a result of all of this. They had to cut a bunch of background screeners and stuff. So it took like a whole year for the process to go through. And I got to the very last step of that process. We had a conditional job offer. We were ready to go, ready to move. Had a realtor out to our house that day. And then I get a call saying that I wouldn't be moving forward from there. And that was pretty devastating. Not so much because I wanted the job like so badly, but just I was ready to move on from where I was, and didn't know what I was going to do. And so I ended up talking to the president of the conference and just kind of like, hey, here's where I'm at. Basically I knew that I couldn't continue and give it my all where I was at. And I think a huge reason for that was because it would be starting over. In essence, where the church was at was where it was in a similar space to where it was when I first got there. And so the amount of emotional effort and all of that to re-put into that was just, it was frankly exhausting. Like I just couldn't imagine doing it. And so, and that's not that there's I don't have anything negative to say about the church as much as just this was my position in the church. I don't know if I could have done that. I continue to do that moving forward. So, in that conversation with my boss, I didn't go in there like I'm ready to quit, but he picked up on it that he in essence said, it sounds like you're saying your time here is done. And I was like, well, I didn't really want to say that, but yeah, that's in essence what I'm saying, I guess. And so, yeah, I thankfully I had paternity leave because we just had our baby. And so I was able to take that. So for like 3 months, I was able to not work and start the process. I applied to like 11 other police departments, and went through this whole process. Long story short, we sold our house because we didn't know when I was going to find a job. We moved in with Chloe's parents for like 2 months. The first week we got there, I was pretty far along with the department, found out I wasn't going to move forward with that. Didn't know what I was going to do. And then all of a sudden, a month later, our friend, Josh, we've had him on the podcast before, gives me a call and he goes, hey, or he sends me a text and says, would you ever work in Southern California? And I was like, oh, gosh. And if anyone, some people who listen to this might know me, but for the rest that don't, one of the things, I spent like 3 months in Southern California back in 2015. Working like volunteering at a church that told me I'm never moving to Southern California. Didn't like it. I'm a Pacific Northwest guy. I didn't like the culture down here, all that stuff. Even when I quit my job as a pastor, I was like, okay, I am not interested. That Grayson's just ready to go, isn't he?
Yeah, he's having a good time.
When I quit my job as a pastor, I knew. I said four things. I know what kind of role I'd come back to pastoring for. I said, and I won't go to a university church, like an Adventist university church. I won't go to Southern California, and I won't go to an Adventist ghetto, like a place where there's a bunch of Adventists. So my friend, when Josh texted me, he works at Loma Linda University Church. So God was like, well, I'll give you the position that you were wanting, but the other things we're going to have to reconsider. And so, yeah, long story short, we came down here and it was like, hey, this could actually work. I wasn't coming down desperate to find a job or anything. We were ready to turn it down if it didn't feel right.
Yeah.
But it just, yeah, it felt right. So yeah, that's an overview of the story.
Well, it's good to have you here. Welcome to the Promised Land.
Yeah. So now Eric and I, we live what? We live like 3 minutes from, well, I guess I work 2 minutes from where Eric works. Sean, you live like an hour away. It's like a whole nother country. It's like you could live on another continent an hour away.
I'm in a different conference. So in Adventism, a different conference is like a different denomination, basically.
Yeah. So it's really weird because like SECC, where I'm at, pretty liberal. Where you're at, would you like to describe? It's a mix.
Well, I mean, it's a mix. You can find anything. So you can find super liberal. You can find super conservative. I would say, you know, I haven't visited every church in either conference. So to say that I have like an aggregate of knowledge
Sean, in what world is anyone expecting you to have visited every church in every conference?
People out there
why
exist.
Listen,
you know the people that church hop, like they've been to every church in the conference, like they don't settle down as a member somewhere.
I don't know about that, but church hopping is a huge, like it's endemic down here.
It happens a bunch.
It's crazy.
Well, here's the thing. It's in California, you've got, at least by numbers, not by percentage, obviously, of the population, but by numbers, you have a ton of Adventists down here.
Yeah.
I think more than anywhere else in the United States. Pretty sure. I'm pretty sure.
I would imagine.
Which isn't surprising based on our state population, but regardless, you've got tons of churches. And so, like, for instance, the school I work at, San Gabriel Academy, we have 45 constituent churches for our one school.
45?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. There's I think the majority of schools in Adventism probably have like one or maybe two constituent churches.
So, and it's incredibly diverse, right? So you have, high Hispanic population, Chinese, Japanese, Filipino, you know, you have a lot of those different church communities that are down here. So you just have tons of those scattered everywhere.
Because kind of a lot of the different cultural or ethnic populations have their own specific church,
yeah,
sort of yes, because like I know like here there's like a Chinese church, there's a Korean church, there's an Indonesian church in Loma Linda, there's a bunch,
yeah. So anyways, but I mean, long story short, I think probably is at least perceived more conservative, at least when it comes to leadership at the conference level. So that's probably the easiest way to make sense of that is it's
we should actually
way.
I'm curious because we just talked about church hopping a bit. So Eric, you tend to go to Crosswalk,
yeah,
right? Which is in Redlands, which is like 10 minutes away from Loma Linda. I'm working at the Loma Linda University Church, but I'm specifically working with the church service called Anthem, and it's kind of the contemporary church service. Then what's funny is, so on this campus, there's the Loma Linda University Church. Literally a 3 minute walk away is Campus Hill. And so we have like the largest Adventist church, maybe in Adventism, other than like, I think there's the churches in China that are probably bigger, but, and are in Asia that are probably bigger, but at least in the US, it's the biggest church in Adventism. And literally 3 minutes away, there's another fairly large Adventist church. And then beyond that, there's Crosswalk, which is a more contemporary modern expression of church. Then you have, all the other kind of local Adventist churches. Then you have the ethnic community churches. I mean, it's ridiculous how many churches there are. But what I find so interesting is how many people would say maybe, oh, like Crosswalk is my church or Loma Linda is my church. But then they're only there. They're only at that church like once or twice a month maybe. And then they're like volunteering at another church or like just going to another church another week and then just gone one of the other. It's like, it's a very weird space to be in. I don't know. Like what's your impression of it, Eric? You've been here for longer.
I mean, maybe it's just the way I view it, but it kind of almost feels like in Loma Linda where I live, it's like there's like the Loma Linda body of Adventism, you know? So it's like, it almost doesn't matter some ways what church you go to each week. It's like, it sounds weird, but like Loma Linda's like your church family in a way. Not like on the macro scale, then, you know, like not.
Well, but then it's weird because like then on the individual level, there's a lot of, it seems like there's a lot more consumption based Christianity rather than. Like people even get involved and do stuff, but it's so busy and it's so chaotic and so crazy that like, even if you are like, okay, there's like the bigger, like Loma Linda body, But mm-hmm. but at the individual level, it seems like there's a lot of consumption as opposed to, like, I'm part of something big. It's like I'm consuming a church service every week, and that's kind of the extent of it for many, is my impression of it so far.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that's kind of an inherent part of just like large churches. It's just kind of, you know, it's very easy for people to just come and, you know, then go, and you're not like directly involved in putting on the church service or the ministries or anything like that. But I don't know what the answer is to that. But
well, then it's funny because, like, then you have Sean over here who goes to a small Japanese American church. And if you don't know who Sean is pretty white. He's very white.
But he does like anime a lot. So
that's the only reason I went to that church. They just, yeah, that's it.
they had an anime Bible stories thing or something.
Superbook. You ever watch the original Superbook? It's just a Bible anime.
Nope, I've never even heard of that. So, but
you know who would have heard of that? Anthony.
That's why we need Anthony.
Anthony, gosh, this guy. Has he even texted?
No, he's not awake. He's 100% not awake.
He's gone. If he's actually dead, we're all going to feel bad. So
this will age really well.
We'll still post it though.
We'll show it at the funeral.
Yeah, there we go. Okay,
this is going dark.
But Sean, you go to a really small church, mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know, do you have some of the, like, because when I was in Orange County, that's where I was for 3 months back in 2015, and it was ridiculous. Like, pretty much the culture, I think I've talked about it before, but the culture, at least of youth, was, someone has a new youth program, so then all of the youth from the surrounding churches end up going there. And then someone builds like a new youth chapel, so then everyone switches over to that church. And then someone does like a new youth group, and so then everyone switches to that church. So then, and everyone just ends up in circles. Like, you just kind of like transition from church to church to church to church to church to church, and then finally you're back at the church you started at because they started something new. Finally, it was just like, it was like, this is ridiculous. This is just consumption. This is just trying to attract a bunch of the same Adventists over and over again. And then, like, we're not actually reaching the world. We're not actually teaching people how to be a disciple. We're just trying to get them to our place. And that's kind of, like, why I didn't want to come to Southern California. And, I've come down here, and it's a bit different in Loma Linda, at least from my perspective. But also a lot of it's similar. What's it like where you're at? Is it similar to that, or, yeah, I don't know.
No, and, I mean, I could go on a long time about this. I'll just try to focus it. Basically, I love the idea of a small church. I like that I know the people I worship with on a regular basis. It's allowed me to have a lot of freedom on being able to support. I've learned that I never want to be another consumption Christian again. I love the idea that I'm, for the last 6.5 years, I've been very involved with the church. It's kind of backed off a little bit since Olin was born, and now with baby number two on the way, kind of taking a step back from some of those leadership positions. But for most of my time here, we've started different ministries. We've been very, you know, Rochelle and I have been very involved with the church on many levels. So that's been a big blessing for us, because I don't know if I would be in church if it was just the university setting where I just, or just even, frankly, one of the churches you guys attend. I don't know if I would go regularly. If I wasn't really finding a place to get involved. And that's not to say you can't get involved in the other places, but there will be people there to do it. And in a small church, it's kind of like, if you've got certain skill sets or talents or abilities, most likely there's someone else that, or there may not be someone else in the church that has that ability, or maybe isn't just stepping up to do it. So I think for me, you know, we started Bible studies at the church. Rochelle and I started that. You know, eventually I became an elder. We started getting a lot more involved in what we're doing for outreach, what we're doing for ministry. And it's really great. I mean, it was so good for me to be a part of that. It kept me accountable to go to church, to be a part of it, to actively be involved in church. And that was really good for me. I think there's obviously downsides to a smaller church when it comes to the limited resources. You know, we don't have a pastor full-time. At least we used to not have a pastor full-time every week at the church because we're just a small church that, you know, 40 mm-hmm. to 50 of us come to the church every week. So when it comes to spiritual depth, you know, that can be a challenge when you don't have a million different programs or the big name pastor that, you know, does all these things. You're a smaller church. So there's definitely pros and cons to it. And, you know, to be honest, this last year, not just with Rochelle being pregnant, but just some other life stuff has had me step down from being an elder, from doing some other things with the church. And it kind of feels a little bit guilty, even though I know it's the right thing because it was just becoming a lot to take on. The reality is church is a volunteer position. So the other pieces that, you know, have to be there in your life take over. And so, you know, a few months I stepped down and I did feel bad about it because some of those ministries aren't really happening in the same way or maybe at the same pace as they were when I was able to give my full attention to it. So
well,
in
Sean,
that way,
I can tell you from a pastor's perspective that your pastor is very disappointed in you. And he now has a heavier burden because you stepped down. So
yep. Well,
yeah.
That's
I
like a backhanded compliment.
I hope you feel terrible.
Well, Jesse, that's actually a backhanded compliment. It's like it would have been worse if you had said like he doesn't miss you at all, and they actually are better off without you.
Right.
You should have gone that route. That would have been more insulting.
Shoot.
I'm really disappointed in you,
Jesse. Messed up
for messing this up. But no, I really did. I felt
you.
For a while. I did feel kind of burdened, like, man, I want to still lead Bible studies or help out with it and get these different things. There's a lot of things I wanted to help start and do with the church and support. But, you know, when you got a kid, when you got different things that are happening, it's like you kind of have to take a back seat for a bit. And there are other people at the church doing great things and all that. So it's not like things aren't happening, but at a small church, people feel it. People feel it when you step back. And so in that way, that can feel like a disadvantage or it's just something you have to deal with. But I wouldn't trade it for the world. I love having a small church where I know the people, where it's just a very connected environment. And so, yeah, I'm really thankful for that.
Eric, with where you go to church, is there, like, do you feel, it's almost the exact opposite conceptually from what Sean is saying. With the Anthem, the church that I'm part of now, it's like 250 people. You know, that's a big day. Crosswalk's a lot bigger than that.
Yeah.
Sean, your church is what, like 100?
I mean, by membership, but really we get, you know, 40 to 50 people.
Oh, dang. So that's even more like completely opposite. So your church versus what the church Eric is going to, Crosswalk, like what's that? What's your experience, Eric?
I mean, I think honestly for us, like Michelle being a resident and having the two kids, like at this point in life, like it is kind of nice having a more quote unquote, like consumeristic church experience just cause like for us, like Sabbath comes around and we just like need a break, you know? And,
for sure.
Especially Michelle. And so it is nice for us at this point in life to be able to just kind of like go to church and like, you know, be able to learn from a good sermon and like have some good music and like have a good experience and then be able to like relax and enjoy your Sabbath and not.
Yeah.
Obviously like there's more than one good way to church. And, you know, I agree that like consumerism Christianity is like overall like negative, but sometimes it, you know, it's not like 100% negative to be able to go to church
seasons.
And be blessed and to not always have to be involved with church.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely like, I definitely see the need for having seasons where, cause like right now we're in a season where Chloe, like our daughter's 7 months old. And so, you know, Chloe is able to bring her to church, but there's going to be a time where it's just it's better if she's going to Sabbath school during church, because we do have it during church, just time-wise here. And so Chloe won't be as involved, because I have to be here, or else I'd be taking her to Sabbath school too. I have to be at the church. So there's a season for everything. So I get that, but it's such an interesting cultural question to ask. Like, what are we doing? What are we creating? What are we feeding, in essence? Because it just seems like one of those things. Josh and I were talking. Josh is the lead pastor of Anthem, and we were talking about, well, what do we want to do? Like, what's the purpose of this? And it's like, well, where do we want to be in 8 years? Because the culture is not going to shift, you know, next year. It's not going to shift in 2 years. It's going to take years to really embed a culture of community and being willing to facilitate. Hey, if you just do need a place to be and sit, you know, for this season of your life, that's awesome, and we want you to be here. But at the same time, that's not the goal. That's not the end goal of Christianity. That's not the end goal of discipleship.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that culture shift seems to take a while. But then there's always like this group of people that want to be involved and are seeking more. And those are the people that I love working with, because they're the ones who have a passion to get involved. They want to be there on Saturday morning. They want to do stuff. They want to grow deeper with Jesus. So that's always fun to work with. It's the wider culture that it seems to be such a challenge. But Sean, you said something. You were talking about small church, and I was joking about your pastor being disappointed in you. But I'm actually, like, there is a serious piece of that, which is that is one of the reasons I think it was. For me, shifting out of where I was the pastor of one church specifically, mostly, and then another church that I was a pastor of, but they were lay run. They ran themselves for the most part. So the church that I was pastoring for the most part was pre-COVID, probably about 100 on a Sabbath, I think, is where we were averaging. And it was awesome. It was fun. I knew most everybody. But at the same time, you're always running up against a small volunteer pool, because if you have 100 people, out of that, maybe 30 people is your actual volunteer pool of people who will be consistent about helping, at least. And then out of that 30 who actually would, then you have the people with kids, you have the people who are having a really busy season of life. So then your volunteer pool shrinks down to like maybe 15. And then out of that 15, it's like, well, what is their skill set? What is their passion? What do they want to do? And so then you get even smaller of like what, like versus like what you need versus what people actually want to do and can offer. And so it's the hardest thing, because I met some of the coolest people, the most dedicated, wonderful people in small church. But small church is so hard to pastor, because you're left with everything else as a pastor. So it's not anyone else's fault. It's just the nature of small church pastoring, which is frankly exhausting, because you can't specialize. So not only am I preaching every week, I'm trying to do visitation. I'm trying to make sure that we're getting certain programs up and running, and I'm trying to also train people into those things. And then that always takes a long time, because for a lot of times, especially small church with a volunteer base, the person you're training may not have the specific skill set or even vision for what we're trying to do. And so that takes a while for them to catch that. And then you're also trying to put out fires. You got people coming to you that just want to monopolize your time and attention for whatever reason. And there's so much that it's absolutely exhausting. And really all I'm sharing is that's one of the reasons I actually shifted out. I was like, I can't do this. Not for my personality. There's plenty of people who can, but for my personality, like, I can't keep doing this and it be sustainable, in essence.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, well, so
Anthony,
Jesse,
how about your life?
Still gone.
Who still does gone. The best Anthony impression? Who can talk like him?
I don't even know.
Grayson, get over here.
Sean, what were you going to add?
Well, so you're out of, you've transitioned away from that small church pastor. What, like, you're at Anthem now, but you haven't actually said what is your job? Because I'm still, your job is as ambiguous as your ethnicity.
Yeah, I'm not the only ethnically ambiguous person now. There's so many people that, because it's pretty diverse down here, and so there's so many people that walk in. I'm like, are you Hispanic? Are you Filipino? Are you? You know, I don't even know. My role is I'm the community and discipleship director for Anthem. So in essence, Loma Linda has three services that run. There's the first service, and then the third service, and the main service, the traditional one, and then right in between is Anthem. It's the contemporary service. So it's, my role is the community and discipleship director. Really, I guess it's a thing that over time is going to develop into more, because Anthem as a church is, or as a thing, as an entity, is only like a year and a half old. So what Josh and I have seen is what Josh saw first and was bringing me into was, in essence, that if this space is going to function well, if it's going to work, if it's going to be sustainable moving forward, it needs to be like a church community, part of Loma Linda University Church as a whole. But there's lots of people that just call Anthem like this is their church. So mm-hmm. What are they going to have? You know, so we have to offer, we have to help develop a church community out of it. So that's kind of my first role, is developing a process for people to get connected to the church. And then second, as time goes on and we're able to solidify that part, I'm going to be working heavily in discipleship. So working in small groups, discipleship groups, just like biblical literacy, those types of things, like just trying to help create a pathway. So when people are in the church, it's like, okay, now I'm here. Okay, cool. I got baptized. I'm here. I'm part of this now. I'm serving. I guess I just do this for the rest of my life. It's like, I don't know. Like the goal of discipleship that I see with Jesus and his disciples is for 3 years, he just like lived with them. He was intensively discipling them. And then there was a space where he sent them out to then disciple other people. And so there is a trajectory. There's a direction to go as followers of Jesus. But we don't even get to the discipling part most of the time. And so it's a really big picture thing. I'm not even saying that it's going to happen. I think both Josh and I feel like, who knows? Like, who knows how successful a lot of this stuff will be? But we at least have to try. So that's my role at the moment. So it's a lot more focused.
Okay. So like on a weekly or monthly basis, has it become... I'm asking the hard questions. Like, okay. I know it's a big, it's a long-term big picture thing. I know.
Sorry,
okay.
Response.
Sorry. No, I am interested despite my mediocre response. I'm interested. No. So when I say, okay, it's 'cause I'm processing.
Yeah.
And ever since you told me, Jesse, and I don't know if we should share the story of
just
that
share
whole.
It. I know what you're talking about.
So when Jesse told me about, you know, and he came down here before he accepted the job and all that, and we were, you know, just looking at like, oh, how are you going to share this with fam? Like, this is big news for you. You guys are looking at moving down here. And, you know, have you told family and stuff? And Jesse's like, oh, no, I just straight up haven't. I haven't told anyone yet. Like, you didn't even tell your
mom.
You didn't tell your mom? So I was like, wait, Jesse, this is a wonderful opportunity to tell your mom. And I don't know how it came about. We were messaging.
You could tell her.
Yeah, but we were messaging. I don't know how it led to that, but I was like, Jesse, I'm just going to tell your mom that I work at Loma Linda for like the executive board. Like, I made up a position.
Yeah, you did.
And I just outed
and
myself.
You called her.
I just this is confession time. If she's listening,
she's
going to
be so disappointed in you, Sean.
She already knows, I'm sure. Yeah, well, so Sean and I did a conference call, and then Sean called my mom so I had my phone muted, and you called my mom and told her, and she was like, she was very excited.
Oh yeah, she was so excited. And in my defense, it wasn't a lie. Like, what happened was, you did get that position. I may have stretched the truth about my role at Loma Linda, the actual job, I think I said, was true. So
yeah,
and then you popped in at the end.
Yeah, I just like yelled at you. I was like, Sean, and then yeah. But anyways, so what were you going to ask?
What was I going to ask? Oh, so what I was going to ask, Jesse, is has it? And it's early on, so I'm not putting pressure on you. But for your actual job, has it become a little clear yet on the day to day or week to week what your job looks like practically, like
yeah,
what you're doing?
Yeah, so pretty much like right now, I'm trying to develop the hospitality team and the greeting team. So if someone has walked in, it's they've never been here before, and we're able to find that out. Okay, like so then how are they getting connected to the church community? What's the first step? Training greeters into that process so that they can facilitate that without my intervention at all. What's the follow-up to someone giving them us their information? This is, I mean, in technical terms called the assimilation process. Like, how do you go from a first-time guest to a fully involved member? So that's kind of the process I'm working on right now. So, I mean, at a very basic level, it's like scheduling greeters. But at the on another level, it's trying to get stuff as simple as like, well, how do, like, what's our form and what does that look like and how is that easy for somebody to fill out so we can get their information and follow up with them, and then what's the process after that for them getting involved? So then I have to coordinate with other leaders about, okay, well, what positions do you need? And then once we get their information, whatever they're interested in, passing that on to people. So that's a lot of the day-to-day stuff. But hopefully what I'm hoping to do is over time be able to then pass some of that on to another leader and then begin to work on discipleship. So, yeah.
So you like to network and be a bit more behind the scenes. Like, you're liking that change of scenery of not being up at the pulpit, doing the behind the scenes networking.
I don't have to preach, and it's like the best thing ever.
Randy Roberts does everything.
He does. I like preaching. I mean, I do. I just don't like writing a sermon. And a sermon is like, it's very hard to write a sermon well week in, week out when you have to do a bunch of different things. So that's where, Loma Linda is crazy. I mean, there's like 12 full-time pastors, let alone all of the local staff, of which I am one. I'm a local hire. So it's a whole nother world, man. I mean, like, when you have the ability for the lead pastor, Randy is the lead pastor, and he is great. He's a great preacher. I'm continuously impressed whenever I hear him preach because he's just a very good storyteller. And he has such a good heart for letting people do. He's like told Josh several times, like, whatever you think is best, you need to do it. And it's like, that's a great leader. So I'm really impressed by that. It's just funny because literally I'm on this campus and there's so much money. It's on a hospital campus. You know, it's you got lots of doctors and medical people paying tithe to a place like this. There's so much money here. It's crazy. So then you can have pastoral roles that are specialized in different things. And so it's just a whole different world. I mean, so in essence, I am enjoying the specialization of being able to do something specific kind of behind the scenes, not have to do a lot of the other stuff. It's much better for me, at least.
It seems like a really good fit.
Cool. Yeah. Excited to see what happens.
Yeah.
Watch you crash and burn.
Yeah. You know, someday when there's a massive scandal, then I'm going to come back and be like, you guys enabled it. So, you know,
that's very vague. It's a vague threat.
There's just been so many like random pastoral scandals that I had to mention. But I mean, I feel like I'll say this. There is a large number of especially younger leaders in our church that would look, because like, for instance, on Instagram, they introduced me, you know, on the Anthem page. And it's funny because what Anthem is, it and Crosswalk, and there's a couple other churches as well, but are there's only three or four really big church or decently sized churches that are doing something that is like a moving the church forward, at least in its style of worship and what church looks like. Anthem is one of those places. And it's kind of funny. I think a lot of people would look at, you know, that Instagram post and be like, oh, Jesse made it, or he's got to this like really cool place. I wish I could be there. What's so funny is like you get to a place like this and you're just like, this is, it's the same as everywhere else in the context, in the context of it has just as many problems. They're just different. And so what I'm finding is it's a much different culture because it's so busy here. It's so chaotic for a lot of people. I mean, like Eric, you were even talking about how, you know, residency and all that stuff. There's people who they just work multiple Sabbaths. So then they're just not even at church except for once a month. And then on top of that, you're studying all week. And so even if you do have a Sabbath free for a lot of students, it's like, do I even want to try to go to church? And then there's the church hopping culture. There's the problem of being part of a large church, and and making sure that like whatever you're doing in the context of that large church is meaningful to people. There's just a whole different set of problems, but there's just as many problems. And so for people who might be listening to this who are like at a small church and they're just like, oh man, like I wish our church could be like that. I mean, yeah, I get that feeling. But what's funny is if your church was like this, it would have just as many problems. They'd just be different. And so it really comes down to, at least for me, I prefer these problems personality wise. I prefer the problems that I'm dealing with rather than the ones I was in other roles. But, yeah, I just want to say that because there is kind of that feeling of like clout of like, oh, if someone made it to this place or is at that location. It's like, it's not really any different other than some things are easier and some things are harder. So,
yeah. So that was a little life update. Anthony is not here with us, as we've said 5 times. He's probably still asleep.
Still hasn't texted. It's 2 hours after.
We'll find out in like 4 hours, is my guess. Yep. But Anthony is still at seminary. He is supposed to finish next year, right? I'm pretty sure that's the situation.
I don't even know.
Press X.
I think he's there for another 3 years. No. We're just spreading. He's not here. We're going to spread misinformation. Anthony's got 3 more years of seminary left. He actually he got a pet goldfish and then flushed it down the toilet out of fear. He was just afraid of it one day, flushed it down the toilet. That's the kind of guy Anthony Leiter is.
I can actually see that.
Yeah. And then, on top of that, he recently got an iPhone. And he blew it up just because he didn't like it. So that's an update on Anthony's life.
So I was always hoping, Jesse, now that you're down here, it's like, okay, we've got 3 of us. Like at some point there could be a time where we could all, so if we go way back to when this podcast started, we actually did our first episode with Eric, Anthony, and I at the La Sierra University Church.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah,
and we recorded in that room. That was our first episode together. That's the only time we've been together for.
Well, we could have done it today, except for Eric has COVID or something like that.
COVID, because he.
Oh gosh.
Because he's. I don't know.
I invited you guys over. This isn't on me.
Eric's like, I just want everybody to know I was being a good host. I was going to be a good host, but
a host of the virus.
They wouldn't come.
but I was hoping, you know, once Anthony gets back theoretically next year, that all 4 of us would be able to gather for the first time in one episode.
Yeah.
And
Eric
I don't know.
Eric is leaving. It's all Eric's fault. Eric's leaving Southern California in like 7-8 months.
But hopefully Anthony will visit in the next 7 to 8 months and the stars will align for us to do one gathering.
Sean, you at realize least. That if Anthony said he was going to come on March 1st, he would show up on April 1st. I just want to point that out based on today.
Yeah, but even then, that'd be before Eric left. So as long as Anthony says he's going to get here before May, then we'll see him by the summer.
That's a good point.
So anyways, Anthony, I think, is doing well. He's sleeping in. He had a crazy Christmas break from what I understand, but... he probably needs the rest. So,
well, we should probably talk about the season.
Yes,
pretty much the season. We decided we were going to address one of the bigger topics that we've avoided addressing, which is the topic of LGBTQ+ issues and that issue with the church. Now, one of the reasons we decided to address it now as opposed to before is we wanted to actually figure out how we could do it in a way that was meaningful, as opposed to just like either hopping on the bandwagon and trying to do it really quick or just not talking about it at all. Like, we wanted to actually talk about how we were going to do it meaningfully. So one of the way we're planning on doing it, and we'll talk more about it in the first episode, we'll lay it out in the first episode that starts that whole series, but we're going to do, I think it's around 5 episodes with a variety of different viewpoints, not with the intention of pushing any of those viewpoints as much as engaging in a conversation with each person, asking questions, and allowing, if you're listening, allowing you to check out those either the point of view, like the worldview, or the resources or anything like that, and be able to make, you know, decisions off of that. At the end, though, on the, I think, the fifth episode, we are going to have a reaction episode where we react to the whole thing. So it's kind of something that we'd ask for everybody to actually listen through all of the episodes before making any judgment calls, even on like what we're trying to do, because the goal of it is to have a long-term discussion over on the whole thing,
yeah,
rather than just like a trying to pump out a one-hour episode, one-and-a-half-hour episode on it and calling it good. So, yeah.
Yeah.
What else are we going to talk about, Sean?
Well, that's a big piece. That'll be our longest series this season for sure. We have some, we've already, as of this moment, we've recorded a few different episodes. So there's some other ones that we definitely want to.
We've only recorded two so far. And both of those involved me. Like, this is when I was living at Chloe's parents' house. I'm like under a sheet in the closet, trying to record with like my phone. So you might have some varying degrees of recording quality, but we did record one on swearing, and
yep.
We're hoping to talk with a couple other people. We want to talk about food media. Why does Christian media generally, why is it terrible? Like, why is it awful? And for that, we're going to have Eric on to defend himself. Defend his Christian media sucks, Eric. So tell us about your projects.
Yeah. Well,
agreed.
And there's, yeah. So like Jesse said, we're going to have different people on. I don't know if we want to name drop at this point, because there's some that have happened and there's some,
Sean,
that
we don't have. We have like one person scheduled. So well, no, we're not name dropping.
No, we're not name dropping. But we have things lined up and plans that will hopefully come to fruition. But we want to talk about also even just the idea of like, is Jesus really coming soon? You know, that's a big part of Adventist identity. How do we look at that? Can we hasten the return of Jesus? That's a big piece of that.
I hate that you even said that phrase.
That's the phrase, Jesse.
No, I know, but I just hate the phrase. Like, you said the word hasten.
Hasten.
Like hasten. What a... Why?
Just rolls off the tongue. Like a word. Hasten.
Sounds like a boy's name.
Can we
name
make
nowadays?
Jesus come quicker? Can we make Jesus come quicker? Like, is that... Yeah. Why is that not... Can we just make Jesus return quicker? Like, I mean, can we not just say that?
Yep.
Gosh,
so,
Sean, you're so old.
Okay, well, anyways... That you already said food media, and then other exciting things, and we're hopefully going to find different ways to interact with you guys. We've kind of messed around with some things, like at Halloween, Anthony and I did a little live stream that Jesse like destroyed. He just got on during that live stream and kept thwarting Anthony and I with nonsense questions.
That's what I'm here for.
But you know, we might pop in once in a while to do stuff like that, just little one-off small short things, since the main complaint about our podcast is we go too long, which is actually a pretty good complaint, because even this introduction,
Sean, this is
going
you
long.
You keep mentioning that that's the main complaint of
that
our
is,
podcast.
It is the main
Literally
complaint.
One person on the Apple podcast review said it's too long. One person has
I've
said
had
that,
some people
said,
make passive
complaint.
Comments. I've heard some passive comments like, yeah, you guys go pretty long.
Yeah, well, that's see, here's the problem is in this world where we're literally consuming TikTok reels that are like 13 seconds long, that's all we're built for. So what we're doing, Sean, what we're doing is a fight against the world of consumption. We're telling people you have to listen for longer. We're helping people develop better habit. This is all garbage. We just talk. I'm trying to defend what we're doing by
Eric
coming
is
up.
Currently
Eric's
yawning.
Literally yawning.
Yep.
Eric is currently.
You can't see it, but Eric is yawning.
Sorry, what'd you say?
Fine. Well, you know what, Eric?
I'm just going to cut out half this episode.
Why don't we
just
end the episode right now?
Oh, but before we do, at this, I'm putting pressure on Eric by mentioning it on the air that we are going to have a merch store. Eric, in his lazy COVID days and paternity time away, has allowed him to set up a merch store, a merchandise brick and mortar storefront Can you imagine?
A digital
if we just opened a store. can you imagine
we
if we opened
three t-shirts with three t-shirts to offer
in La Melinda? Jesse, can you start selling our merch in the cafe there?
I'm just gonna sell it out of the green room
conflict
here.
Of interest?
I'm just gonna sell it out of the green room and just like really shady. Just someone shows up. I just like, where's the money? Give him the shirt in a brown paper bag.
Hey kid, you want a shirt?
Yep, that's how we're gonna do.
Randy Roberts wearing that shirt. Anyways, yeah,
give him one.
Gosh.
So if you want to support the podcast for some reason, it does cost us money to run this with website fees and hosting fees and all that stuff. You can go on our website, seekingsda.com, and scroll down. You'll find a link to our merch store. And right now there's just one shirt design, which is pretty cool, I think. But
it's a pretty cool shirt.
If hopefully there'll be some more in the future that we'll come up with.
And last of all, to end the episode, I just want to point out that Eric is bringing up the costs of this because Eric is usually the one who pays for it up front and asks for us all to pay him back. And Anthony has most likely not paid him back for most of the stuff.
I feel like Bernie Sanders.
And that has been the first episode.
I'm once again asking for your financial contributions.
Please buy shirts to make up for Anthony's negligence.
Perfect. Awesome. Well, that's it, guys. We'll see you in the season.
All right. It's going to be good.
All right.
Thanks so much, everyone, for listening to this episode of Seeking What They Sought. To Jesse, Sean, Eric, you know, I just have a simple thought for you, and that thought is I have so much love for you. Thank you so much for being my friend. Friends, plural. Anyway, thank you guys again for listening to this episode. If you have enjoyed Seeking What They Sought, if you've enjoyed the episodes, would you consider swinging on over to iTunes and leaving us a review? It's super helpful for us, and it helps iTunes know that people are listening and there's stuff happening, and we would really, really appreciate it. So thank you guys so much for that. Now, before we end, we just want to say thank you to our beloved producer, Eric Edstrom, who's actually the winner of the annual German Made a Pizza and Then Ate That Pizza Award. Eric, we love you. You're fantastic. All right, everyone. We'll see you guys next time on Seeking What They Sought.